welcome, peoples of the interwebs. Tis I, Christy.
And me, Kelly.
And you're back joining us once again at Unnerved.
Woohoo! Welcome, welcome. If we sound a little like off today, we are both remote. So.
Yes, we have to record remote because today is my last day of the virus. I didn't take my own advice, you guys.
You are in the COVID quarantine. Timeout corner.
It sucks ass.
Yeah.
I don't recommend this at all. but I'm at the end. I tested negative. Like I'm free by the end of the week. I'm not contagious anymore. It's just like the lingering effects right now.
Yeah, and you might have those for a while.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Hopefully it goes away quickly though.
Yeah. But anyways, back to Unnerved.
Yes.
Kelly.
Yeah.
You picked the movie this week. You should announce it.
Okay. Well, first, if you're new here, welcome. Christy and I watch a horror movie every other week where we then talk about it and we go through like a synopsis and do some fun facts and give our very biased opinions. So this week we actually chose something I really like and I'm really terrified of. And we did Sinister from 2012.
Yep, we sure did.
I think Christy doesn't like this movie.
Look, I'm okay with it. I'm just not, like, involved. Like, it's fine. It's fine for what it is. I feel like it's slow in some portions, which I also understand. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of this movie, and I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of flack for that on the internet, but you know what? I don't give a shit. You know, I already have a reputation of hating Blair Witch, so why not add Sinister to the list?
I honestly think Blair Witch is more of a crime than hating Sinister. I can get why people don't like this movie. And there are things about it that I don't love. So I'm sure we'll get to talking about it, but the overall movie is absolutely terrifying to me. I had to watch this one alone this week and I didn't do very well. So I was purposely doing something else. I was like, okay, you can watch this movie. You have this to work on. Why don't you do that? So you're not so creeped out. But the music in this movie is absolutely terrifying. So whole ambiance. I was home alone. I was really scared. we'll talk about it.
Let's get into it. Kelly, just jump right in and hit us with our cast.
Sure. So we have Ethan Hawke, who is Ellison Oswald. We've seen Ethan Hawke now at least once in The Purge, right?
He's in that.
Okay. So,
yeah.
Yeah, pretty famous dude. Next is Juliette Rylance as Tracy Oswald. I believe that's the mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then James Ransone is Deputy So-and-So, also plays, Eddie, right? In It, as the adult version.
Yes.
So I actually watched Sinister a while ago before I watched It in It Chapter 2. And when I saw him in this, I was like, I completely forgot he was in this movie. Then Fred Thompson is the sheriff. Claire Foley is Ashley Oswald, the daughter. Michael Hall, D'Addario as Trevor Oswald, who's the son. Vincent D'Onofrio is Professor Jonas, and then Nick King is Bagul, also known as Mr. Boogie. The film is directed by Scott Derrickson, and it is written by C. Robert Cargill.
Yeah. You nailed it.
Hell yeah. D'Addario. Doug Dimmadome.
Whoa.
Oh, wrong, not even the right genre, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's a Monday for us.
Yeah.
All right, now let's get into the story, you know, the meat and potatoes of this nonsense. I don't know what else to say. So immediately we're starting off by watching a family, you know, have bags over their heads. There's a family of four that we see.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch them raise up off the ground and are hung by the neck. So they are free.
Yeah.
And then cut to a nice happy family moving into their brand new home. a family of four. Now, is this the family of four that we just saw and that was like a flash forward? We don't know.
Not at this point.
We don't
know. We find out pretty quick.
Oh, so. Yeah, we do find out quick. I'm just saying it gave into some suspense.
Oh, like, yeah.
Oh, could this be the family that's just going to get murked? No, mm-hmm. not this go around. Not today. So we then get them moving in. We have the cops show up and they're talking outside and the sheriff's like, can you like not be here? We went through enough as a town. We don't need you digging up anything we don't want dug up.
He's very, I wouldn't say rude because I don't think he's being rude, but he's like forceful about it. You know, he is very clear on his stance about how he feels about this guy living here.
Yeah.
And his family, but mostly the guy.
Yes, because we understand soon that the guy is a true crime writer and has gotten on the bad side of police quite a few times and not a happy-go-lucky relationship there.
I think it's something along the lines of, like, when he has written books in the past, the cops he felt didn't do their job. Mm-hmm. So he kind of called them out for that and said like they were lazy. And I think, I don't know if he possibly stereotyped cops or something within his writing, but in any case, the sheriff is like, nah, fam, I'm not about you. I'm not about your family. I'm not about you being here in this town.
Yeah.
Like, keep to yourselves, keep your nose clean. We're not going to have any problems.
Yeah. And then we cut to a little girl painting on her walls.
Yes.
And then dad goes and talks to her. You know, hey, I know you're upset about moving,
mm-hmm.
but we moved. And, you know, after I'm done writing the book, if you want to move back home, we can. But you got to stick it out.
Basically, a tough love moment. Like, it doesn't sound like the family, kids and mom, are particularly excited that they've moved into this home.
No, it was 100% dad's decision.
Yeah, it doesn't even sound like he really consulted his wife. But I don't know, she's pretty supportive, considering.
Yeah, but I think she, like, begrudgingly was like, all right, fine, we'll go do this. Not like a, oh yeah, this sounds like a great idea for us. That's what I get.
Yup.
So, yeah, we get more moving in, and we cut to him moving something up into the attic, and he finds a scorpion.
Heckin'. So scare. Scorpions drops... are scary, though. Low-key, I'm scared of scorpions.
Well, he kills it with the box he was carrying.
Smoosh.
And this is where he finds an old movie projector and family videos.
And they're all, like, marked with a little name and then the year. Last two digits of the year. All 1900s for the most part, I think.
Yes, because that video cameras weren't around before that.
And we'll find out later, but these are all Super 8 films, I believe. Yes.
Yep. Then we have a wonderful family dinner, you know.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, the family seems relatively well-adjusted.
Yes. Yes, they do. They just kind of have a nice discussion and whatnot. And then the parents, we cut to them going to bed and having a nice discussion as well.
Mm-hmm.
She's
rightfully worried, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he's kind of, you know, trying to ease those worries a little bit. But they seem to be in a good place.
Yes. Yeah. So he's going to go work while everybody's in bed, and he's going to watch these movie projector, like, he's going to go watch, he's going to get some popcorn, get some whiskey, get a notebook, and watch a movie.
Have we seen the backyard of their house yet?
No.
Okay.
Or at least not a lot.
Okay. They have like a shot where they pan to it and we see Ethan look outside and just like look at the tree. But
no, he does that after he watches the movies. Because okay. He realizes he recognizes the tree.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Yeah. So as he's watching the movies and whatnot, he sees a happy family playing around in the backyard, barbecuing and whatnot. And then it immediately cuts to the hanging footage that we saw at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, my God.
Yeah. That's where he goes and he looks outside and checks out that tree because he recognized it.
So we heckin' realize he decided to move into the home of the previous family that lived there who got murdered on the property.
Yes, that there were 4 found dead and then Stephanie is missing.
Yes, their little 10-year-old girl.
Yes. So we realize now it's a family of 5 and one of them is missing.
And that's what he's here to write his book about.
Yes. So he's trying to help figure out where Stephanie is.
Mm-hmm.
So after he looks outside at that wonderful tree, he hears creaks and cracks throughout the hallway coming from his daughter's door.
Ugh.
Well, he walks towards there and finds the daughter in a different room who couldn't remember where the bathroom was.
Yeah, so she's super sleepy tired, Bean.
Yeah, so he got to put her back to bed and everything like that. And then he goes back to work and watches the next reel. And we see another super happy family hanging out. And then we cut to just chains and bones. And then we see the family chained up and duct taped in a car and the car being lit on fire.
Yeah, real good. And this looks very, what, 70s?
Yes, this one kind of looked in the 70s.
Yep.
And then the next day he calls the police station and hangs up.
Yeah, it's like he thinks about reporting the evidence that he's found, but then decides against it for some reason.
He decides that he's going to solve the case.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, but like, bruh. You know? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're one dude. This is clearly some real, real horrible stuff you're dealing with. Maybe you should.
But he probably does resent the police to some extent and thinks that he can do better.
Yeah.
So that's why. Or he's thinking that it will be even better for his book.
I think it's a lot to do with that. I definitely, like, kind of undertones and side comments throughout the movie that his first book or his first big book, Kentucky Blood, did really well, but it's been some time since he's been able to write another bestseller. So yeah. The money's starting to run dry from the first book, and there's a lot of pressure to do really well on the second book. And instead of doing it for justice, like I think he did for Kentucky Blood, this one's really more about making money.
Right. So he decides he's going to start up the next reel, but then he hears more creaks and creaks going on in the house, thinks it's his daughter, goes to check on her. She's in bed.
Yeah,
then
she's
fine.
Then he
hears footsteps upstairs in the attic.
Yeah.
And behind him.
Yep. Creepy,
so we're
going to
investigate the house.
And he automatically assumes, like most people would, that somebody is in his house or something is in his house. Whether that be a creature or a person. Not that it's a supernatural thing.
Right. He walks around and investigates room by room, but he finds his 12-year-old emerge from a box having night terrors.
Okay, this is terrifying. Like, excuse me, you do not need to come out of a box doing a bend over backwards move. It's horrible. It's horrible. It's very creepy.
And then we have breakfast time.
Yeah, so the next day they're like, oh my gosh, you haven't had night terrors like that in forever. And they're like, yeah, that's not good. We'll have to make sure that, you know, he doesn't do anything else drastic.
Right.
Keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
And I think the little daughter says something about having a nightmare. Like, oh, I've had those before. And they're like, no, you haven't. You have nightmares. You don't have night terrors. And that's as
Yes.
far as they go with that.
Yeah, so everybody's gonna go off to work and school, and Dad's gonna go back and watch his reels about his happy-go-lucky families.
With some whiskey.
So the next one he, yeah, the next one he watches, the family is playing in the pool, and then we cut to them being dragged into the pool from the pool loungers and drowning.
So, get this. I thought like maybe these were, you know, I don't know, dummies or whatever. And then they made little things where like robotic feet so that the feet would move once they go into the water. No, those are people. Those are
Yep.
people. Those are stunt people. Like,
Yep. All of the stunts were done by stunt people. In fact, the hanging tree one actually went wrong at
yeah.
some point. So the stunt people were hanging for a little while. And the person that was in charge of prepping that immediately was fired.
Yeah, and everyone was okay, but I mean, that could have been a huge
Yeah,
issue.
everybody's fine.
Oh.
So. But this time, we see a creepy man in the background.
We do. Creepy,
Ooh.
greasy man. He hasn't showered in a while.
Yeah.
He looks
And
like he
then
has
the
greasy
reel
hair.
catches on fire.
Yes. Yeah. And he's like,
Yeah, the reels start on fire then.
yeah, and then Ellison's like,
What
what
the fuck? So he does some a Googling. Fixes the reels in the projector and converts it to his normal camera and can hook it up to his laptop.
He does some you know, average technology update. Like,
He
make it
installed that
easier.
Windows update.
He did.
He committed.
Yeah.
But now he can save and watch them all from the comfort of his laptop and go frame by frame if he needed to.
Yeah, so easy stop and start, and that's super important. Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And now, it's the end of the school and work day, and the family comes home and they're having a screaming match in the hallway. Trevor, the 12-year-old, apparently was caught drawing some inappropriate things at school of a hanging family and is yelling at mom saying that he knows more than she does, and he gets like grounded and sent to his room. So, peace out, Trevor.
And Tracy is therefore a little bit upset with Ellison because Ellison put them in the situation, and you know, what are you doing to your family? It's all
Right.
very, I think, very rational anger. Like,
Well, yeah.
I'd be angry too. And again, Ellison kind of talks her down off the ledge. They make up, and it's fine. Just a little blip.
Little blip. So now we're back to researching another reel. We see a doggo immediately.
We do see a dog, a little chihuahua.
Yeah. And then we see a family bound up, and then we see a knife come into frame, and we see and hear actually the family's throats being slit. We don't actually get to watch it, but like we hear the actions happening.
The most that you get is in the reflection of his glasses. Like, you can
Yes.
see it that way. This is pretty gruesome, but no dog. Dog lived.
Well, yeah,
So,
dog is fine.
yeah, dog is kicking, but not the rest of the family.
Yeah, we probably didn't see all the cool stuff because they were trying to keep this movie at PG-13, but because
Yeah.
of the contents, it was R. I'm like, why would you even try to make it PG-13?
I was gonna say this is not in any way, shape, or form a PG-13 movie. Like, there's no
No.
way. The content of this, you're literally, the concept is that he's watching snuff films.
Yeah, it's not like back in the 80s when we always have like, or we've discussed the, like, difference in the rating systems and everything like that.
Yeah.
No, we have the rating system now with the PG-13 in mind. There's no way that this would be PG-13. We have the R. It's not an X rating. Just go with the R-rated movie.
Like, I don't know why they would... I don't know why they want... Like, I get they wanted it to appeal to, like, a younger... Like, get more people in and have it be available to a younger audience, but this material is not appropriate for someone who's 13.
Correct. Anyways. So, now we're gonna go back and doing some Googling and more video watching for more... But we get more spooky sounds in the darkness that we have to go investigate in the middle of the night.
A lot of scenes in this movie with Ethan Hawke or Elson, where he's got, like, a baseball bat, and he's just walking around in the dark at night in his house.
Yeah. Well, the power goes out for this one.
Yep.
So he's got to have a flashlight.
A little extra spooky spook.
So this one, he hears a bang, and he grabs a knife from the kitchen for this one.
Okay.
And he goes and searches in the attic. And he finds a box with a snake under it.
Sneaky little snake.
And the box had a lid on it. And on the inside of the lid has a drawing of one of the murders. Or actually all the murders. And Mr.
Yeah,
Boogie in each one.
Mr. Boogie.
They're like crayon drawings.
Yeah, kids' drawings. Very clearly a kid or someone of childlike intelligence drew this.
Yes. And then he falls through the floor and injures his leg.
Yeah, he does a oopsie. Oopsie boo-boo.
Yes. So, he has to get all patched up. A deputy comes and investigates and ends up offering to help with the research.
He's interested because he wants to be that deputy so-and-so that gets mentioned at the end of the book. As a thank you for helping with the investigation. He's a fan.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of starts like that. He's definitely... The guy who plays him, James Ransone, he just has a very, like, natural charm to him. I just find him very fun. Very, trusting.
I love him. I've said it once and I'll say it again. I love him.
I love him.
He was great in It Chapter 2, and he's great in this.
Yes.
I love him. I also find him, like, I wouldn't say he's up there on my attractive guy list, but I do find him attractive.
Really? It's not my type.
Like a little attractive. I wouldn't say, like, oh my gosh, he's like Chris Hemsworth. No.
Ugh.
I'd say, like, he's, like, at the average level of, like, yeah, I could, yeah, I like it.
I'd tap that.
Yeah, I would.
I think I'll pass on him, which is weird. I mean, between him and Ethan Hawke, I don't know.
I wouldn't choose Ethan Hawke over him.
Ethan Hawke got a little bit of them crazy vibe.
He do, though.
Have you seen interviews? I watched a couple interviews, and he's very rambly.
Yeah.
So, he seems a little eclectic.
A little. Anyway, so Deputy So-and-so is going to go look into some addresses. We cut a few hours early, like later, and Deputy calls with those addresses, blah, 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 and we get this mind-blowing revelation about, like, oh, one family dies, and then the next reel took place, and it bounces between all the different addresses, like you move from one place, and then they moved, murder. That next person that was there, they moved and then murdered. So, So Mr. Boogie on the move.
He is. So they're like, and they're trying to think a little bit back if, like, if this is a serial murderer, then, like, serial murderer. It's just serial killer. My God.
Yeah. Silly. I know it's a Monday, but good Lord.
But basically they're like, well, if this is a serial killer, they would have to be, like, in their 70s, you know?
Right.
But it all kind of pieces together, because everything in the films, I think Ellison says something along the lines, it's like, it doesn't require a lot of strength to complete these things.
No. So we also see in the background Mr. Boogie move on his laptop.
This is real spooky times. But this is one of those moments that, like, kind of infuriates me because we're going to say this now, I don't think Mr. Boogie's makeup is very good.
Okay.
And I don't think it's very believable, and it feels very CGI'd. Like, they could have done that really practically, but it feels really weird. And I don't know if that's the point. That could be the point.
Is it just in this specific scene or overall?
No, it's overall.
Okay. I was getting, like, pagan, like, vibes off him so that, like, I wasn't trying to make him look super realistic in my brain.
That's fair.
So I guess it didn't bother me in that respect because I saw him, like, like in Supernatural. Do you remember the episode with the Scarecrow in the, like, season one?
Yeah.
Way back. Like, I got that kind of vibe.
Okay.
I don't know why I always think of that, but I do.
It's been a while since I've seen that episode.
But then the reels start going by themselves. In the middle of the night, in the open office.
Creepy beans.
Soup's creepy. And he sees Mr. Boogie outside for a second and goes to look for him with a baseball bat.
He do, and he finds none other than his son.
In the bush!
Mm-hmm.
Trevor's in the bush.
Having more night terrors.
Yep.
So, you know, they do a little, oh my gosh, he brings him inside, and it's like, kind of chilly out, so Trevor's cold, and they're trying to get his wife, and he's like, I gotta go back out, I dropped something, because I think he dropped the flashlight?
He dropped the baseball bat.
He dropped the baseball, okay. And then he encounters a dog, a Rottweiler, to be specific, growling at him in the backyard. Yes. Well, he thinks it's at him, but...
Yes, it's really the ghost family behind him that he doesn't see.
Yeah, it's actually, I think, 5 kids?
I think so. I don't remember off the top of my head, which it could be the kids, but I don't remember.
And, Doggo not ghosties. Happy. Yeah, we see ghosties and they look rough.
Yeah. But the ghosts go away, Doggo runs away, he gets his baseball bat, and now we have a wonderful fight between mom and dad.
Yeah, she's upset. Upset. Yeah.
She's pissed off.
I mean, she's thinking that the things he's unearthing have an effect on, you know, their son. And I think at this point she mentions that, like, I've never seen you drink this much this quickly in a case. And he's like, this is my chance. Like, don't take this away from me. This is how we get everything back on track. And I thought you were supportive. It's not good.
He's chasing fame and she's just like, but what about us?
Yeah. 100%.
The next morning, Deputy So-and-so shows up, and they're talking about more help and whatnot. And then he goes and does more research. So he sees another family, but this time the family gets run over by the lawnmower.
This one's scary. This is definitely more of a jump scare because you see the lawnmower and you only see maybe like a foot or two in front of it because it's dark out and there's like a light right in front of the lawnmower. So you are like, and it definitely builds the suspense. So it has a few, like you're kind of watching it go along and then all of a sudden you see a person and then holy crap.
Then it cuts away because they were trying to not have stuff on film.
I'm cool with that. I didn't need to see that on film to know what it accomplished.
That's fair. And now we have the virtual meeting with the pagan researcher / Professor Duke.
Yeah, I think it's because what he's finding is there's this symbol in different parts of the films that he's watching. And I think the deputy got him into contact with him.
Yes.
Okay.
I think so. Otherwise, he just found him online.
But he is an occult specialist. I'm pretty sure the deputy does. He's like, I know a dude that might be able to help you out.
Sure. I don't remember. and then we learn about Bagul. mm-hmm. aka Mr. Boogie's real identity, and how he needs to trick children to eat their souls.
Yes. So after kind of talking through this, it's something of the occult. It's possible that these murders might be part of like a cult initiation. So these people might be sacrificing entire families and then basically offering up the child as, I don't know, sacrifice. I don't know. Whatever you do in a cult.
I mean, we're not in one, so we don't know.
Very true. So.
Yeah. So cue another spooky night.
Also spook.
We see ghost kids.
Yeah. Five of them. And I think we're starting to put together that because each family had a missing child in it, it's the same as the first murder we get introduced to, or murders that we get introduced to, that you can kind of put two and two together that these are the missing children.
Yeah. So we found out through the professor guy that Bagul essentially tricks kids, takes them to his other dimensional world, mm-hmm. and saves them, you know, for a rainy day or for emergency, like, food supply to eat their souls.
Yep.
Yep. So we're seeing the ghost kids, but we think that they're ghost kids, but really they're kind of, like, showing themselves through the veil of the other dimension.
Yep.
So we get another conversation then with the deputy. I don't remember exactly what that one foretells or anything like that.
Oh, gosh. I don't remember.
You think I would have written it down, but I don't remember. It was a short conversation.
It's not the one where he has, like, a heart-to-heart with him, right? That's... Because he sits him down.
I thought that was, like, the last one.
That's what I thought, too.
No, that... The one where he sits him down is the one after this book.
Okay.
Right before they move, I thought.
Okay, yeah, I think you're right. I'm pretty sure.
Or it could be this. It's either this one or the next one that one happens.
Either way, deputy's along for the ride and is still doing research and still there. Yeah.
So little girl is painting on the hallway walls, and she shouldn't be.
Oh, it was. But he does talk to him because. I remember now. Yeah, they do have that couch conversation because he asks if his wife knows, and he says no. And he's like, okay, dude, like, I don't want to be there for that one.
Okay. But yeah, little girl painting. We find out that she was painting her quote-unquote imaginary friend, Stephanie.
Yeah, and then she tells mom, like, it's little girl who used to live here. And then finally mom puts two and two together. And she's like, go to your room. Your dad and I need to talk.
Yeah, I think mom was just in denial the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
And she couldn't ignore it anymore.
Nope. And they have a screaming match. dude moved his family into the house of a family murder. Dude. And didn't tell his wife about it.
Nope.
You deserve everything that you're getting yelled at for. Like.
Oh, yeah. But they get through the fight. And then we're on to another night. Of the projector goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
The ladder to the attic comes down. And he goes up.
Yep.
And that's where he finds the projector. And we see more ghost kids.
Yep. And they're watching the films.
Yeah. And we get another jump scare of Mr. Boogie himself.
Yeah, he comes down right in front of the camera. Another, I think, bad shot. Like, it's scary. It's effective for what it was used for, but it just doesn't look like... It looks like someone had him do that off screen in front of a green screen and then put it in.
That's fair.
And that just really angers me for some reason.
Yeah. He decides that he's going to take all that stuff and burn it. And now we're going to... go on the run and move back to wherever we came from.
He does what we want all horror movie people to do. He leaves the house with his family.
But we're going to realize that that was the worst thing he possibly could have done, because that was the final catalyst.
Which I love that twist. I do. You wouldn't normally see that coming, because it gives you this false sense of
security.
Ease, yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
But they move back.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's chill now.
Yeah, he gets a call from the professor again, who talks to him a little bit more about Mr. Boogie, and basically was like, hey, these are the historical images, a scorpion, a snake, and a dog. And then I think he also tells him something like some people believe that like film or pictures of him allow for his presence to come through. And yep. Ellison asks if once they do that, if you destroy those things, will the gateway close? And then Professor Man gets all suspicious.
Like, because Professor Man, I don't think fully believes, because it's all folklore and whatnot.
Yeah.
But then he's just like, okay, dude, are you cuckoo bananas or what's really going on?
Yeah. Yep.
But that call ends before we get the answers. Or he gets the answers. We already have the answers.
Oh, and they're like bringing stuff back in, and he finds a box.
In the attic.
Heck
again.
Yeah.
And it's all the stuff he burned.
Including extended cut endings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which he watches.
Yeah.
He also talks to the deputy on the phone again. And that's where he makes the connection that he's heckin' screwed.
Yeah, I think this is the point where he realizes it was the kid.
And that this happens after the family moves from the location.
Yes. So not only is it like, uh-oh, our children, but also, uh-oh, we're gonna die.
Yes. And he watches all those reels again, and he looks into his mug because he feels funny and realizes that he was poisoned by his daughter.
Hell yeah. Well, she did learn how to do his coffee earlier in the movie.
Yeah. We then have him waking up, and she has the whole family tied up and murders them with an axe.
Yeah, so bunch of blood everywhere. We don't see the actual act of it, but we see the aftermath. Not the bodies, but like the hallway and stuff. And
yeah, we see bloody. The blood.
And then she draws a picture.
Yep.
Because she has to, you know, she's got to go through all that. And then
she films it.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Yep.
And then it ends with her. The camera's going again on the wall. We see the kids in like an old hallway kind of. And she like tilts her head and you see Mr. Boogie behind her. And then he picks her up and walks her into that other realm.
Yep. End movie.
Yep. Oh, just one last shot. The box of films is now in that attic, and it has a new film on it titled House Painting 12.
Yep.
Roll credits.
Roll credits.
Whew. Spooky.
We kind of blazed through that, so this might be a shorter episode, and we apologize, but
well, you're right, know. It's very repetitive. It's a simple story, and we don't need to go into detail about the snuff films.
Like, no, I mean, we did. I mean, we told you what we saw. We don't see anything.
Not really, but you get it all. You understand what's going on.
You know what it is. You know what it is, but you don't need to like know what it is.
Yeah. Fun facts?
Sure. So our kill count is 20.
Yikes.
Yeah, because that's including all the families and everything like that, because we do see them. They're stuff films.
Mm-hmm.
The original idea came to Corgill's in a dream.
Yeah.
After he watched The Ring.
It's all connected.
So he pitched it over drinks. He had like 5 white Russians or something like that when describing this. Then they wrote the script within 5 weeks. I already mentioned the tree situation, the lack of blood and gore because of the ratings.
Yeah.
We mentioned the Super 8s. I did find something kind of fun. In 2020, Forbes magazine conducted a study where the Science of Scare project, where they were rating heart, they were monitoring heart rates on viewers watching scary movies, and this one won out with the highest average of the heart rate spiking.
Yeah, I mean, this movie does a really good job of suspense. And just overall creepiness. It's creepy.
Yeah. In that study, they said, oh, it's being deemed as the scariest movie ever made. False.
I would say maybe the most suspenseful.
This movie is not scary. I don't get suspense. I'm bored.
Well, that is a personal opinion, because I find this movie absolutely terrifying.
I know, like, two or three other people that don't find this movie scary. So it's not just me.
Now, you also don't find, like, Paranormal Activity or Blair Witch scary, and those are all ones I find really scary.
Okay, I don't find really any movie scary.
True.
Let's be real there. But, though I do not care for this or Blair Witch, I do love Paranormal Activity.
You do?
I watch that every year. I'm the one that showed it to you. Well, I love Paranormal Activity.
That one's scary, too. It's got same vibes.
Yeah, but I'm not scared by it. I just enjoy it.
Okay. This one scares me. This one really scares me.
Hence why it was your choice and why we're covering.
I think what I talked about before, too, is the soundtrack is odd. And it's very unsettling, and I think that adds a lot to it. Okay. I found something on it. But basically, Christopher Young composed a lot of the background scenes or scores for the movie, but the actual stuff that plays underneath the like snuff films and stuff is it's by Ulver, Judge Hydrogen and Boards of Canada, and it's just like a bunch of noises, basically.
Yeah, I do like the soundtrack. I'm not gonna knock it on that, but like, I don't find the story compelling.
I think it's enough of a twist.
Well, do you have taglines? Because I have a feeling we're tiptoeing now into our great debate of the grading system.
Well, sure. I mean, is there anything else? You didn't like it?
I don't have any
to say about it.
I just don't care for it. I didn't find a lot of fun facts. And
there's not a whole lot.
I mean, this was I watched this middle of last week in the midst of my COVID lockdown, and yep. It was like the fourth or fifth horror movie that I watched that day.
Okay.
So, but even then, I've watched this like two or three, maybe even four times before that, and every time I'm just like, okay, I'm meh. I don't like hate this movie. I'm just very meh towards it.
I don't know. It is something about, like, I don't like the children in it freak me out. Like, the ambiance freak me out. It's just, the storyline is creepy. I like the twist at the end. It's creepy to me. It's really creepy.
Okay.
But I do have taglines, so.
Yeah, hit us with those.
Okay, so once you see him, nothing can save you. Be the first to see the year's most terrifying film, whatever. Have you seen him? And tonight you've never seen anything this sinister. I like that one.
That one's good. All right. Well, now we're going to grade this shit. Kelly, what are the rules?
Yeah, so we have 5 questions, which we both score on a scale of 1 to 10 for a possible score of 50 individually and 100 total. Ready for the first question?
Yeah.
Okay. Was this movie scary / was it a good horror movie? I mean, for me, obviously, I gave this a 10 because, yeah, like.
All right. I gave it a 7 because I am trying not to put my own biases on this.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would be a 2. If I was grading for me and me alone, it would be a 2 because I don't find it scary at all.
But is it a good horror movie?
I don't find anything scary. Now, I do say that's why I gave it a 7 is because it is well directed, like it's very visually pleasing and all that, and it's got the right formula. It's just not my idea of a good time.
Yeah. Okay.
How is the acting?
7.
I also gave it a 7. I had no problems with it.
Yep. How were the special effects?
Now, I gave it an 8.
I gave this a 4.
I kind of delved into like the music as an effect as well, because that's okay. What's getting you the jump scare.
Yeah.
Essentially. And honestly, Mr. Boogie's effects didn't bother me too much, because I, like I said, was imagining him as like this pagan deity that can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood at the end was fine. So.
Okay. I don't know. The kids kind of also, it's that ghost effect. I don't think they got quite right, but.
Okay.
That's okay.
I wasn't mad about it.
No, it's not distracting, but for the quality of this film, it's odd.
I mean, this was kind of low budget. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, we have the biggest budget ever.
True.
Compelling story or have any interesting twists?
Because I find this one scary and I like the ending. I gave this a 10.
I gave it a 5.
Okay.
And then lastly, character development and writing.
I gave this a 7.
I gave it a 5.
I think Ethan Hawke's character has a good character arc.
But I wish we saw more effect, like, on the daughter. Like, I want to, like, maybe see her go from this sweet, innocent girl to, like, heavily influenced by Mr. Boogie.
I think part of it was, like, he would neglected his family so badly. And I also think they were almost making us think that it was going to be the son.
Okay.
But.
I could see that. See, I guess it was the daughter right away when we were like, oh, we have a missing girl named Stephanie. I'm like, okay. So he probably prefers the little girls, or maybe like the youngest in the family.
I think it's more the youngest, because I think at least 2 of them are boys.
He likes them fresh.
Ew. Ew.
You're welcome, internet.
Ew. No, take that back.
I can't. It's out there now.
Well, my total score was a 38.
Mine was a 32. Which is making it a 70.
Where does that fall?
We have a tie.
With what?
Fright Night from 85.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right. So we'll post that tiebreaker out into the world soon. Probably this weekend. Hopefully. It's going to be a busy weekend, so we'll probably be like near the end of the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, we'll post that, and we'll get everybody's vibes on Fright Night from 1985 versus this week's episode, Sinister, from 2012.
Yee.
I know my pick, and I already know your pick.
Yeah.
And they cancel out.
Yeah, I was going to say, although Fright Night's really good, Sinister, I think, is the better horror movie.
I strongly disagree, which is why we don't need to say much more. Our opinions cancel each other out.
Yep. Yep.
So no voting, Kelly.
Well, if I vote, you just won't your vote. Count it.
Yeah, I won't count it because you've already voted. So, yeah. Next time, we have another listener recommendation. We're covering Urban Legend.
I have not seen this.
I have. It's kind of inspired by Scream. Kind of a deal.
Okay.
It was requested by Nicole, so we'll shout her out again on the actual episode and everything about that. And then we'll have, after that, my recommended choice, which Kelly hasn't seen.
I can't remember what you want. Oh, I remember.
Yeah, so we'll announce that next week as well. Please give us more recommended films.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of going through our list pretty quickly, actually.
There's a lot out there, and poor Christy's going to have to watch more of the ones I like. She doesn't like the ones I like.
Well, same could be said for, like, reversed.
Yeah, a little bit. Although,
otherwise, we'll just keep flip-flopping between us and keep going from there.
There are so many more movies out there, so
We're good. There's just so many. Yeah. We're covered, but, like, we also want to know what you guys want us to cover.
Yes.
That's important to us. It's so important. So, Kelly, do you have anything else to plug?
No, but if you do like our artwork as much as we do, you should go check out my sister Danielle at Danny Draws Dragons on Instagram. Very, very talented person. Super great. Super awesome.
Yeah.
Go check her out.
Yeah. So, also stay safe and spooky.
Mm-hmm. And all healthy. That jazz.
And healthy, as healthy as anyone could possibly be right now. Mm-hmm. Go check out our Twitter and Facebook. Twitter at Unnerved, Facebook at Unnerved, a horror movie podcast. That's where we put out our voting systems, and that's where we check for recommendations.
Yep.
So that's where you guys want to go to join our communities. We have a nice, wonderful community on both platforms. Super great, super awesome. Yeah, that's it for me. That's it for Kelly.
Yee!
We'll see you guys in 2 weeks for Urban Legend from 1998.
Ooh.
Ooh. Bye!
Bye!